Welcome to BICOM's weekly Hadiyun podcast. We will be talking a lot about Israeli elections over the next few weeks, and I'm delighted to have with us today Anshul Pfeffer, writer for Haaretz, for The Times, for The Economist, for The Jewish Chronicle, and of course, author of the biography of Bibi that is out in shops at the moment, and no doubt being very carefully read by all those people watching the election campaign play out. Anshul, very good morning to you. So really, we've seen this week a lot of talk on the Israeli political scene about mergers and splits, and you know, some real drama where we saw Avi Gabay, who's tanking in the polls, did this spectacular humiliation on live TV, where he announced that the Zionist Union was no more and bound Tzipi Livni into the fact that she would be running with Hatnua on her own. We've seen already sort of last week Jewish Home and the New Right splitting, Naftali Bennett and Ayelet Shaked setting up on their own to form a slightly new party. And we've got stories this morning about maybe Shas worried that they're not going to meet the electoral threshold of 3.25% of the vote to actually get into the Knesset, that they may even be merging with Degel HaTorah and Agudat Yisrael that make up United Torah Judaism. I mean, I really wanted to ask you, I mean, what do you make of all these talks about splits and mergers? Is this all like a shadow game? Will these blocks just reform as we get closer to the election? If you could give us like your sense of what's actually going to happen.
So basically what we're seeing now are the four stages of an Israeli election campaign. We're still in the first stage where the various parties are coming into being. So some of the parties are non-existent. They've just been founded by various well-known or lesser-known Israeli personalities. We've got probably the most spoken about party is Benny Gantz's Israel Resilience Party. Then we've got Orly Levi Abikassis, a Knesset member formerly of Israel Beiteinu, founding Gesher, another figure who's less well known to non-Israeli listeners is Eldad Yaniv, a professional protester, former master of the dark arts of campaign strategy, who set up his Eretz Chadasha party, and perhaps other smaller, less well known parties which are coming into being. Another type of new party is the parties which are created from the splits. We have Zionist Union, which ran in the last election under Yitzhak Herzog, Labour leader, which on Tuesday suddenly was closed down unceremoniously when Avi Gabay suddenly announced that he was ending the partnership between Labour and Tzipi Livni's Hatnua. So now we have, instead of Zionist Union running together, we have two parties. We have Labour, the old venerable party that once founded Israel, and we have Tzipi Livni's Hatnua, which ran only once on its own in 2013 and may run again now independently. And on Saturday night, we had the surprise announcement by Naftali Bennett and Ayelet Shaked that they were leaving Jewish Home and setting up their own, the New Right, with them and another of the Jewish Home Knesset members. And so now we have two parties in which on the right, which are going to be competing individually. The Jewish Home has to decide who its new leader is going to be and how are they going to run. Are they going to add on new right-wing parties to somehow bolster their presence? So that's the first stage of the campaign, which we're sort of nearing the end of that stage. The second stage will be each party building its or casting its list of candidates, bringing in various personalities. We'll see a bit of a beauty contest in which various Israelis, more or less well known, will be paraded in front of the public, and there'll be a lot of polling to see how well different candidates are doing. And some of the parties will be holding their regular primary selection. Likud, Labour, Meretz will all be having primaries. Other parties, either leader of the party or a small select committee, which will decide who would be the candidates, and most crucially, where each candidate will be on the list, because the position of the list means how viable that candidacy is. You know, a party which could get 6 or 7 seats, if you're on number 8 on their list, then they're you know, that's not very viable. If you're on number 3 or 4, it means you'll probably be in the next Knesset. And some parties, it will be the rabbis who decide which candidates will be on the list and where they'll be positioned. So that's the second stage, which will probably finish around towards the end of February, when the lists will have to be handed in to the Central Election Commission. And there's a third stage, which will take place just before the cutoff date with the Electoral Commission. And that's the merger stage. And we'll see, we'll probably see some of these parties which are not so sure that they're going to pass the electoral threshold of 3.25%, or parties which could pass the electoral threshold but will think that perhaps they can do better linked up with another party. The sum will be more than the parts, deciding at the last moment to merge their lists, and they'll have to find ways of deciding who will be where from either party on the list before the cutoff date and the final stage of the election, when everyone knows which parties are together, who's on whose list, and who's in the running. And that will be the last stage of the campaign in March and early April, when the parties will start in earnest pushing their messages on television, on radio, certainly online. And that's basically how an Israeli election is run, certainly in this day and age. And we're just nearing the end of the first stage.
In terms of the big stories and the things that's going to happen over the next few weeks, I want to just ask you a series of relatively quick questions. I mean, first of all, the story with Labour is fascinating. I mean, as you said, the party that established the State of Israel, you know, was in government until the 70s. This could be the election where that party, you know, the great party of governing Israel, could basically be completely eclipsed and could be, you know, maybe polling at maybe 6 or 7 seats. I mean, that could realistically happen. Could you see any other scenario?
Well, right now we have 3 or 4 parties of similar size. We've got Labour, we've got Yesh Atid head by Yair Lapid, we've got, and now we have the Gantz party, and all of them are polling in the region of 8 to 9 to 12, 13. So they're all competing for pretty similar group of voters, and you can add on slightly smaller parties in the polls, Kulanu of Moshe Kahlon and Gesher of Orly Levy. So we have about 5 parties, and now Tzipi Livni perhaps running on her own. So we have 6 parties all running for this centrist pot of votes, a bit of right of centre, a bit of left of centre. At least a third of all the votes are in this pot. And right now it seems that Labour's not doing very well in the polls. Then they're down to single digits, somewhere around 8 seats. And if that's what Labour gets, then certainly Avi Gabay won't be able to remain leader after the election. And there'll be a big question mark over Labour's future. But I do see a scenario in which the best campaign will be run by Labour, and people will think, actually, Gantz is too much of an unknown. Yair Lapid is... You know, he's run already 2 elections. He hasn't really got much to show for the 2 terms he spent in the Knesset. One short term, one of those a rather short term as finance minister. The dynamics really could go either way, and Labour could make a comeback. Avi Gabay is not yet tested as a campaigner on the national scene, but he ran a very effective campaign to be Labour leader. He was a surprise candidate coming out of nowhere, winning the Labour primary against all the pros of the party. So yeah, he could still surprise us, but you're right that right now the scenario doesn't look very optimistic from his point of view. I think that he made a very interesting decision in ditching Livni, which basically he's playing for broke. He doesn't, you know, he wants to run this election on his own accord. If he does well, it'll all be down to him. And right now, he can only do better than what he's doing in the polls.
Yeah. A quick question about Shas as well. I mean, you know, a party that's been able to appeal beyond an ultra-Orthodox constituency to the wider kind of Sephardi, more working class community, that appeal perhaps has waned over the years. Those votes have gone elsewhere. Is this potentially going to be the party that Shas doesn't make it the threshold, or are they going to be forced into a merger? What do you think might happen there? You're an avid student of the ultra-Orthodox scene.
Well, Shas has been shrinking since 1999 when they got their highest result ever of 17 seats. They've gradually been descending and shrinking. And the reason, and there are multiple reasons for that. What the main reasons perhaps is that Aravad Yosef, the figurehead of Shas, is no longer with us, so they don't have that figure to take around, to electromize around the country and to give blessings to people and have all these people vote for Shas as a result of that blessing. And they don't have Rabbi Yitzchak Kaduri, the old Kabbalist, anymore to do that. They only have Aryeh Deri. And Aryeh Deri was once a very popular figure amongst that constituency, but his popularity has waned over the years. He's become tarnished by corruption scandals. Another one. He's in the midst of another investigation, and he could well be indicted in the next Knesset term. So this doesn't bode well for Shas. I wouldn't yet write Shas off, because they've always found ways to slightly exceed expectations in the polling expectations. They had a quite good local election campaign just a couple of months ago. So they're in the running still to pass the threshold. But you're right that the fear is there, both among Shasniks and among the other right-wing figures who are relying on the Shas seat to fill out a right-wing coalition, whether Shas can still hack it. And there is a possibility, and it's being talked about in recent days, of Shas joining up with the two parties which combine United Torah Judaism, Agudat Israel, and Degla Torah, and creating one united Haredi party. That is a possibility. And we'll have to see over the next few weeks whether that's going to be something that's actually on the cards.
So let's talk about Gantz, which is the great unknown here. And like you wrote in the Times this morning, that, you know, he's managing to get a decent amount of support where he actually hasn't said anything. So, I mean, you know, there is various whisperings about Gantz, like, is he decisive enough? Is he going to be able to cut it in the cut and thrust of a very fast-paced election campaign? If Bibi sees him as his main rival and Bibi sort of really goes for him to undermine him, how's that going to play out? I mean, I last, you know, had a decent amount of time with Gantz in May last year, and we were discussing, you know, Trump pulling out the Iran nuclear deal, Israeli operations in Syria. And he struck me as very shrewd, very wise, very strategic, but he didn't strike me as particularly quick-witted, as in, you know, being very, very, very fast on the uptake, in the sense that a, you know, 24-hour multimedia campaign would require him to be. Is that a fair assumption? Am I being fair on him?
I think you are being fair, and I think that that's quite an accurate description of the situation. However, right now, like I said before, we're in the beauty contest stage of the election. This is just the stage where candidates come forward, new party leaders come forward, and we're today in a climate where all the existing party leaders are tarnished. I mean, Avi Gabay has been almost 2 years Labour leader, hasn't really left his mark yet. You know, we don't, most of the voting public doesn't really have a good idea of who Avi Gabay is and why they should why they should vote for him. Yair Lapid, the shiner, has really gone off him. If you're not a devoted Likudnik or right winger, you probably don't want to vote for Netanyahu. So Gantz is there as an untarnished figure. Everyone knows who he is because he was the chief of staff only 4 years ago, and the chief of staff of the IDF is a major figure in Israeli public always. So he'll always have he'll always have the cachet to enter politics. And since Gantz, during his period as chief of staff, there were no major wars or setbacks for the IDF, that he's seen as a relatively successful chief of staff. There are those who would dispute that and say that his military record isn't that incredible. But the fact is, right now, he has the name recognition and he has the stature. And, you know, he's like this tall patrician bearing blue eyes, You know, he evokes memories of the past of the generals and the Israelis of, you know, of past generations, and a lot of people warm to that. But you're right, the moment the campaign will begin in earnest, and Gantz will have to start talking, will have to start campaigning, and will have to set up a campaign machine that can be there 24/7, respond to everything that happens, take the initiative, have a campaigning grid. I mean, all these things which professional campaigners know how to do, and Gantz has never done it in his career, that will certainly test him, and it'll test whatever team he's been capable of putting together. And then we'll see whether Gantz can live up to the promise of the polls.
When's he going to say something? When are we going to hear
Apparently, more? There is a press conference or a campaign speech scheduled for this evening. So that will be his baptism of fire. And first impressions are very important in elections. And I think the best example would be Amir Peretz when he won the Labour leadership back in 2004, I think. And one of the first things that came out was a speech of his to an audience of American Jewish donors, in which he wasn't very impressive in English, and that kind of created a negative impression for Israelis who saw that, and that I think that doomed his campaign already then. So the first major speech, the first major appearance, you know, not getting anything wrong, not, you know, being confident, and he's a confident fellow, but it's a different kind of scenario in which from which he's ever been tested in. That will make a big difference either way.
So let's conclude then by really talking about the front runner, the current prime minister, the man that you've been studying and had your book, which I think I mentioned before, is in bookshops. Bibi, you know this man in terms of the way that you analysed all the campaigns that he's run before. He's currently the front runner, Likud in the lead. How is he going to run this campaign? I mean, he, I think you've talked before about sometimes when he's the underdog and his back's against the wall, he's a more formidable campaigner. In this campaign, he's a mixture of both. He's the front runner, but the constant talk about indictments and even news this week that the Attorney General is very likely to announce whether or not he'll indict Netanyahu before the election could give him that sort of underdog status. So how do you think Bibi's going to approach this campaign? What's he going to do next?
Well, the campaign, is, as far as Bibi's concerned, is just the first stage, because this more or less 25%, give or take, of the public who voted Likud last time, they more or less can be expected to vote Likud again. The margins, or the floating voters between Likud and other parties, the numbers aren't huge. For Bibi, the challenge is really to keep his 30 seats in the Knesset, perhaps get one or two more and say, this is my renewed mandate. He doesn't have that much control over what's going to happen in other parties, and to what degree will he preserve his right-wing and religious coalition? He probably will, going according to the polls over the last weeks, months, and years, that 62, 63 seats majority could well stay intact. But the problem for Netanyahu is that it's not enough, because he needs, on the day when the indictments, when the Attorney General announces that he's planning to indict Netanyahu, but on the day after the hearings, which will come after the Attorney General's announcement, when the hearings are over and when the indictments are sealed, assuming they are, Netanyahu wants to be able to stay on as Prime Minister, even if he's charged in court. Now, the law is not 100% clear. It does indicate that he can stay on, but it's never been tested in the High Court, and it's certainly never been tested politically. We've never had a majority of the Knesset saying, we are happy to continue serving under a prime minister who is under indictment. And that's what Bibi needs now. Bibi needs enough MKs in the next Knesset to agree to do that. And it will certainly be something he will try and bring up in the coalition talks after the election. So for Netanyahu, the real battle is not April 9, the election date. Not even the coalition talks to set up a government. It's the behind the scenes of the coalition talks, in which he'll try and get the parties other than Likud to agree to standing by him after he's finally indicted. So that's where the real challenge comes in.
So you don't see if there's an announcement by the Attorney General, it's sometime probably between February, March, it starts to get too late. Sometime between February and March, the Attorney General says, you know, pending a hearing, I believe that he should be indicted for bribery and breach of trust. You don't see that denting his core Likud support. Will it then dent the willingness of other party leaders to form a coalition with him? Will we see any other party leaders say, I will not serve in his coalition now?
Well, here's what we can't foresee. We can't see really how it will affect the election campaign. Will Netanyahu be the main subject of the election campaign? And will other parties in the running, party leaders especially, be forced to say in public, we will or won't sit with a Prime Minister under indictment? And we already have Moshe Kahlon, leader of Kulanu, Yair Lapid of Yesh Atid, saying, we won't sit with the Prime Minister under indictment. They're not saying we won't sit with Bibi, but they're saying if it will come to pass that the Prime Minister will be indicted, then we won't sit with him. And that's a big problem for Bibi, because winning the election is one thing. He's a winner. He's won most of the election campaigns he's run. This could well be his fifth victory. However, winning the election and then being forced to resign after a few months is a hollow victory. And I think that will be a major theme of the last few weeks of the election. Will it dent his appeal to Likudniks? I don't think so. But it could already spell the end of his rule if a large number of parties in the running and the parties who will eventually form the new Knesset will have already ruled out sitting with him in the same coalition. And it may also mean that when they come to the coalition talks, they'll say, you know, we don't really see the need to form a coalition with Netanyahu if he's only a short-term prime minister, and that'll also be a negotiating, to be a bargaining counter for them. They could say, well, you know, what are you prepared to give us for any kind of guarantees that will carry on sitting with you? So this will certainly cast a pall both over the last few weeks of the election, assuming Mandelblit does make his announcement, which is we're starting to hear from the Justice Ministry that he is planning to make an announcement before the election, and certainly after the election during the coalition talks, which, as we all know, are the fifth stage of an election campaign. After we have the results, and that's the most important stage of any Israeli election, that happens on the day after.
Final question. Could we see a scenario where the Attorney General recommends an indictment and that there are maneuverings within the Likud before the election date that he should no longer be the leader? And if that is very unlikely, could we then see after the election, as the potential coalition parties start to say they wouldn't want to serve with him because he's potentially going to be indicted, could we then see maneuverings within the Likud to try and replace him as leader? Are either of those scenarios possible, or is that just out of the
question? They're possible, but they're extremely unlikely for two reasons. One, Likud is unlike Labour Party here. Likud is a party which has always stood by its leader. No Likud leader has ever been deposed by the party. Timing of a Likud leader's departure has always been resignation. It's never been, if you want to go as far back as Jabotinsky, then death. But Begin, Shamir, Netanyahu, Sharon have all resigned at different points on their own on their own accord. It's never been the party kicking out the leader, and I don't see that happening now as well. And the other reason is that even though there are certainly figures within Likud who would like to show Netanyahu the door, none of them want to be seen as deposing him, because Netanyahu is still a very popular figure within the party membership. He's delivered five election victories, three consecutive ones. They all see him as an election winner, and none of the potential challengers, Gideon Saar, Israel Katz, Gilad Erdan, perhaps, want to be seen as having wielded the knife. And you know, the person who wields the knife usually doesn't sit on the throne. So they're all waiting for Netanyahu to either resign or be forced to resign by legal issues rather than leading a rebellion against him. So it's possible. I think it's very unlikely that we'll see a move within Likud to remove Bibi. He'll have to resign himself at some point.
Right. Okay. That's very clear. Anshul, thank you so much for your time today. That's been a really, really fascinating journey through all the possible scenarios, and no doubt we'll speak again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, James. Bye.